Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show. I'm your host, Jeff Gamet, and we are here to talk crap or cool stuff about the tech news this week, and then probably find ways to spend your money with some cool things. So I feel like we should get into this because I'm betting everyone has very interesting stories, and I can't wait to hear them because I'm clearly here just to be entertained. So, no pressure on the three of you.
Are you not entertained? Are you
Well,
not
I will be.
entertained?
Speaking of Patrice, how are you?
I'm having a good week, I have to say. It's like stuff. I mean, Jeff and I, we recorded two episodes of Retro Rewatch this week. That's already a good start. I like there was a lot of cool stuff happening. I don't know, it's just been a good week. I got today. I can show that here. Finally, my class two medical for flying. So I got that finally. Took a year to do it and a lot of fighting, but I got it.
That is
So I'm like,
fantastic. I'm
yay!
glad you have that.
So yeah, and I don't know. It's just been a really good week. It's like
Awesome.
it's just so much good stuff happening all day, every day. I'm happy.
Then I'm going to live vicariously through you, so no
Good.
pressure.
No pressure. Okay.
Yeah, no pressure.
No pressure.
I guess what I'm saying is if I end up sad, it's on you.
Oh. I'll
No,
make you
it's
happy
not.
again.
I know you will.
We'll watch an
You
episode of
always
Retro
make me
Rewatch.
smile.
Sorry, of this Stargate SG-1, and record an episode of Retro Rewatch, and then you're happy again.
That's all it takes. I apparently I'm really easy to please.
Yes.
No comment.
Speaking of Ian, how are you?
Me? I'm great, thank you. You? I'm a variegated place. Yes, that's no fair there. Yes, good week this week. I'm teaching all week, so it's been a fun week. So my life is
Cool.
one long team session. That is basically my life. And now even in my leisure time, I'm now still one long session with the camera on me, and I've got headphones and on a microphone. Hey, but it's been fun this week anyway. It's a good group. I've got a good group of people there. They're all having fun. They're all asking lots of questions. It's all I can want from a class. So, all good.
Awesome. Awesome. And our West Coast awesomeness, Tom, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Had to do a storm damage assessment this morning when I got out of bed. We had howling
Ugh.
winds overnight. Had an umbrella, an unopened umbrella on a patio that blew over within inches of a window. So that was a win. Didn't break the
That's a
window.
win.
But the fence that used to be straight as narrow is now got a lean to. So I was thinking it's a big long fence. It's probably 60, 70 feet, 60 feet long, and 6, 7 feet tall. And I was thinking, should I re-engineer that? There's such a big surface for the wind to catch. Do I need to put some baffles on it or something to redirect the wind and minimize the pressure on it?
The
Or
answer
is
was
that
yes.
over-engineering? Or am I over-engineering?
The answer was yes.
Yeah, Tom, if you get the opportunity to over-engineer something like this,
Yes.
do it.
Well, how they do with big flags? They poke holes in it or to let the wind through so it doesn't blow it down. I thought, well, we could do that, except then what's the point of the fence if it's got a
That's
bunch of holes in it?
exactly what's the point of a fence.
I was thinking baffles
It's all
maybe
supposed to be
at
slatted
different.
like that so it goes through, isn't it?
Well, I was thinking if we have baffles at different angles, no single angle will take a brunt of the force. So, if the wind's coming from 45, it'll catch some of the baffles, but the other baffles it won't catch. So,
You need to look at the design of those walls at airports, like for the jet
oh
engines,
yeah,
because like they, I
oh
mean,
that's a good idea.
they have to deal with a lot more than a little bit of wind.
Okay, I got some homework to do. That's a good
Yes.
idea.
And then your fence, when people look at it and they're like, what is that? It's art.
Exactly, it's art.
No, they just think that's that nutcase that lives in the corner.
Well, at least he hasn't made any bombs, so we're okay for now.
Not yet. Yeah, I'll be the Ted Kaczynski of the Rosemont.
Have you seen his fence? Amazingly beautiful manifesto.
Yes.
I'm gonna write.
And completely over engineered.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
well,
you should become the what's the guy's name? The guy who built like a bunker in his backyard and like he built tunnels.
That guy from the UK.
Yeah, exactly. What's his name?
I can't remember his name, but like he built a flying speeder bike.
Yeah, he's
like Star
like
Wars. He did the land speeder.
Yeah. It's like
him.
Yeah. But what is his name?
Yes, I know what you're talking about now. I can't.
He wears a tie while he does all this stuff.
Oh yes, he does.
So I hope it's a breakaway tie.
What is his name?
I cannot remember his name.
Yeah.
Is it Ewan Rankin?
We wish.
No, Ewan doesn't wear the tie.
Yeah, we wish. Wish it was Ewan Rankin.
Colin Furze.
Yes, Colin Furze. Thank you.
Yes,
Colin Furze.
Yes.
I like the comment he made about his bunker. That mm-hmm. when he talked to like his real estate agent, they said, "Well, actually, now what you're going to do is sell an underground bunker with a house attached if you ever sell your property."
Yes, exactly. I mean, and now, I mean, he built a garage like that where he can like drive his car and then it lowers down.
And it drops down. Yes.
Yeah. It's like he has secret tunnels into his house and all of that. Like it's just, yeah. Like that is definitely over-engineering it, and it's just perfect.
The guy should learn to occasionally go down to the pub and grab a beer, you know, relax a little bit.
Why don't you get his friends over to his super tech bunker?
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, so
did you see the engineering he put into the door?
Yes,
the underground door.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yes. Yeah. So Tom, that should be you.
Okay.
Like you should be the American Colin Furze.
Okay.
Yeah, Ian, if you found any links for any of his stuff when you did your quick search, throw them into the live chat for the people that don't know who this guy is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he's done like a lot of crazy stuff over the years.
His Iron Man suit that flies.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised he's not dead.
Yes.
There we go. There's a link to the Land Speeder.
Yeah, I think he is also surprised he's not dead, so.
Can you imagine his insurance rates?
He probably doesn't have insurance because it's like, can't afford it.
No one will.
Or no one will, yeah, that could also be. Yeah.
All right. We should probably do some stories.
Should we?
Or we can just talk about crazy things that guys do that are clear.
Men in sheds, the British Institution.
Why women have longer lifespans than men.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tom beat me to it, though. I had it on my clipboard waiting to go. Ah, yeah. Dagnabbit.
So, Tom.
That's all right. You didn't beat my story, though.
Stories that are breaking my heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
Take it away.
So, I think a week or two ago we talked about the 5x increase in
Alexa,
RAM prices.
Stop. She just started speaking some dissertation for me.
That's our first short title already.
Yeah.
Alexa, stop. So Alexa is apparently very unhappy with prices of components going up. Western Digital announced about a week ago that they're already sold out of all their hard drives for 2026.
Mm-hmm.
Hard drives, not SSDs. Yeah.
Hard
drives.
And for 2026, and we're in, mid-February.
Yeah, right. We're 2 months in.
Not even.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked about the the RAM price is increasing by like 5x since August of last year. And hard drives, spinning drives prices have gone up almost 50% since September.
And they were already quite high.
This is spinning drives rather than spinning drives.
Hard drives.
Yeah, because I mean, for all those AI models and training systems and like all of that, you need a lot of spinning drives these days. Like, because they're still cheaper per gigabyte than SSDs.
Significantly, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes
sense. And you know, like we talked about with RAM, the WD guy said 89% of their business comes from cloud providers, so enterprise. Mm-hmm. And only 5% comes from consumers. So guess where they're going to sell their hard drive?
Right. It makes sense from a business perspective for them.
To Elon Musk to send them up into space. No, I don't know.
I'd pay some money
To send Elon Musk into space, yes.
Yeah.
On a stack of 4 terabyte hard drives.
Yes.
Of course, I've been putting off the purchase. You know, I have a desktop and a laptop at home, and the desktop is pretty long. The laptop is only a year or two old. And I've been putting it off, saying, I kind of wait till the new year. And now I'm guessing, you know, if you buy something now because of the inventory and how it gets pushed through, it's possible you could buy a PC for a reasonable price, but I doubt it.
Because I mean, now especially with this report out there, everybody and their grandmother just bought the hard drives because panic
buying. Panic buying. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, I mean, I'm in a similar boat than you. Like my old backup drive in my server just kicked the bucket. It's not a big loss because this always was an old drive, but it literally just died like 2 weeks ago. So I'm like, that was a really bad time. I might literally just not do it. I mean, I have 8 other drives in this server. I might just wait.
Well, I think that's the point about how it hits consumers. It's not so much for your OS and all that stuff. Everybody has NASs and backups that are using spinning drives.
Yes.
That's the biggest hit for us, I think.
Yeah. I'll have a quick glance at the prices and. Like, I mean, I don't need a lot of storage, so that's maybe I might be able to get something that nobody else wants to buy. It's a backup drive. Well,
and the big question is, you know, all these businesses always have cycles where demand outstrips supply, so they build more capacity, and then there's too much supply and not enough demand, and then they stop building.
But yeah, it's all cycles.
Just rocketing. It is, but it's rocketing so fast this time. I don't think the usual recovery techniques are going to work.
I think when was the last big? I mean, there was the beginning of COVID rush, 2020, where it was 2020 into 2021, where it was super high. And I think then it died down. But in 2023, I want to say, or 2004, we had that flood in Thailand. So then it rocketed back up again, and I mean now we're 2026 and it's happening again, so it's we're barely getting. I mean, it takes a year or a year and a half for it to normalize, so you barely have time to actually benefit from it because then it goes back up again.
And I'm used to in semiconductor, it was always the classic cycle was memory. DRAM.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, we just go up and down and up and down and up and down. But I think a lot of people are saying that this cycle is very different because the nature of the demand is so different. It's so big and it's all enterprise. It's not consumer really at all.
Yeah. It's not a normal cycle where the normal cycle is the demand and the supply are more or less, the demand is more or less constant. It will adapt a little bit as the supply goes down. It might adapt a little bit because the prices go up and people might not buy whatever. Right. But more or less, it's just a normal cycle where over time, the demand is more or less the same. But right now, the demand is the driver. The demand is going up and the supply can't keep up with it.
Right. And I'm wondering, you know, what's going to be next? And I'm thinking, I mean, there are other things in electronics and semiconductors which are getting the pinch, you know, substrates and a bunch of other weird stuff I've never heard of.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there'll be some chips, you know, because the TSMC is running at capacity and it's overbooked. If, you know, somebody
I could definitely see that.
You know, a Wi-Fi chip that's in short supply because they couldn't get capacity from TSMC, so you can't get you know,
Get
a laptop anymore because the Wi-Fi chip's not available.
Yeah, that I could see. I mean, especially the lower tier chips like in car. I mean, we had that, when was that? Was that, I think that was also around the time like COVID and whatever. We had that problem with cars, right? Where cars couldn't get chips because the high demand on other like higher priced chips basically. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that will happen next because I mean, especially it's not that there's high demand for NVIDIA chips. It's like, no, we talked about it, right? Microsoft is doing their own AI chips. Apple is doing their own AI chips. Google's doing their own AI chips. Like everybody is like now trying to like gain some independence from NVIDIA. And that also takes out, and the increasing demand also takes out some capacity out of that.
Certainly for chain. for the high-end segment, because it's all being made by TSMC, one company.
Yeah, and I mean, if TSMC focuses on where they can make most money, which is the higher end.
Which is what they will do, aren't they?
Yeah, then the lower end suffers.
Yeah. So the question is, when is the crash going to come? Because the crash is the only thing that's going to correct this in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
The demand has to fall off because the supply is going to take too long to catch up.
Or it levels off at a higher level, right? I mean, that could also happen.
Right.
It is simply a new normal. Well, right. The prices might come down, but the demand stays. Like the prices come down because the supply becomes available, but the demand stays at a high level. That could happen.
Yeah, I just think for somebody like Western Digital, even if they're building more capacity, they're still going to favor selling to enterprise business instead of consumer.
Yeah, but I mean, to be fair, that's kind of always been that way.
Yeah, except that the enterprise demand is so high right now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unusually high because of all the data center built.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what I mean. If there's a slowdown in data center built for any reason, that might help for us consumers. It might not help the economy much, but it helps consumers.
and you know, then we're going to send them into space and then we have another peak in demand.
That's right.
Right.
But we have seen this over time and time again.
Through the atmosphere, burn up and pollute our upper atmosphere.
Yes. Or might just explode on the... whatever. Just explode. Summer during takeoff or before.
We can be set way out at some point in the future.
Yeah, but I mean it's an interesting question, like where does it go? Like will this like level off at a higher level and it just stays that way because now we just for the foreseeable future need that high level of data centers and the thing is it's not just building data centers, right? After depends 2 to 5 years that the hardware has to be replaced, and if you have more data centers and more servers you also need more stuff to replace it with, right? As long as the demand is still the same that you're serving. So it's a long running thing, and that's the question. Like there's two options, right? Either we're overbuilding right now, and in a couple of years nobody needs that anymore and we have data centers nobody needs, and then the demand and hardware will also go down again because nobody needs it, it will not get replaced, or it stays on that level or increases. Could even increase still,
right? Then you have to wait for the supply to catch up.
Yeah, but for those people who are saying, NVIDIA is doomed and all of those companies, it's not looking good right now. Yeah. I mean, eventually, but like, you know, eventually, you, and eventually we will probably all die. So it's like,
well, I mean, it's a safe bet that everything that's here is only temporary, unless we find a way to colonize planets outside our solar system.
Yes.
Because at some point, if we manage to live that long, our sun will die.
Yeah, I mean, eventually, if astrophysicists are to believe, we will all, the universe will die, right? So,
so we could end up being Battlestar Galactica.
Of anything.
Yeah.
The last vestige of humanity on a ship heading out into space. Yeah.
I think we are. I think that's most likely going to happen. And everything has happened and will happen again.
Oh, yeah.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. No, but it's an interesting question. Like right now we're feeling the pinch of this increase. The other thing that happens though is that also investments get deferred. Right? Yeah. I mean, there's companies, also enterprise customers, that are saying, well, is right now the right time to buy hardware, to buy servers? Maybe we can survive with what we have right now for, I don't know, a year or so. And then and then have a look, because right now, and that's also what happens, right? So the demand also like goes down a little bit.
But some of those discs are going to reach the end of life cycle, like your disc in your run thing.
Yeah.
And we would see regularly stuff ending up in 3-4 year end of life cycle of sets of RAID sets where we'd lose a couple of discs.
Yeah.
It's part and parcel of doing business. And then you've got to try and replace them. And you've got to tell a customer, oh, that disc you bought from us but it was £100 is now £400 is going to be hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Everything goes up, but you can play well, if you want Gemini, you have to have the. This costs 400 quid. You know, that's what it comes down to. You know, it's mad. And we'll probably see some amount of, as you say, people hanging on to the hardware for another year and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
I mean, for a consumer like you and me, you'll probably think, well, that computer's really expensive this year. Now, damn it, I'm just going to stay with the laptop I bought last year or the year before. It will do for another year.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, let's say some customers have planned for that and have inventory that they can like run through that they usually would just like refill, but now they're not.
Yeah.
Which works for a while at least, but others are planning more short term and they're like, okay, we need those drives tomorrow. So they're buying for increased prices.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the effect on the economy, we'll see. Right? Because increased prices usually also end up somewhere consumers paying for it.
Yep. So they will find a way. We will always pay.
Yes, one way or another.
Yep.
I'm going to get you, get you, get you, get you.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's a secondary side to this. Right now we have, I mean, there's a lot of cash around for AI companies, right? But it's getting harder for those AI companies to also have a profitable or build a profitable business. Because if the prices increase for data centers, if the prices increase, that means also the prices for those models and like everything they're doing, the services increase at some point, right? Because if the RAM is four times as expensive, if the hard drives are, let's say, two times as expensive, that means every token that you use for an LLM gets, I mean, a fraction, but a little bit more expensive, and that adds up over time, right? And so that can make or break some companies.
Well, it's not like they're swimming in profitability at this point.
Yeah, but anyway. I mean, that is true. But some of them are at least can show that they could be profitable, but that might get harder if the prices increase.
Yeah, I think it, at the current cost for both training and inference and all the other things they have to do in between, I can't imagine too many business models yet that result in profitability. So they're going to have to get the...
I'm not aware of any, to be honest. Yeah, I'm not aware of any. I mean, OpenAI is it's the biggest example for that. Like, I mean, that business is like... I mean,
so
I don't know.
Talking about ads and stuff, but there's no way the ads can support their costs. So
the
end result is somebody has to figure out a way to do training and inference cheaper. That's the only.
Yeah. Which has already happened. I mean, as much as you might doubt the numbers we've seen from China about what was it called? The model DeepSeek.
DeepSeek.
Even if they were hiding some of the cost, it's like experts were saying it was way cheaper to train, like from what they could tell.
Right. And it seems like there have been a lot of optimizations on the training side for mm-hmm. sure that just sort of the brute force training and adding more data doesn't really buy much. So they're doing more incremental optimizations, which are cheaper to do. Mm-hmm. But I think we need an order of magnitude of cost reduction before any of this stuff really takes off.
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, the I also think the bubble is gonna burst. I mean, there's a whole discussion: is AI a bubble or not? I don't think AI itself is a bubble. It's just the investment side of it. Like, I think AI itself is here to stay. It's just like how crazy you are about the investment side as usual. So that is gonna burst. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, the technology isn't in a hype cycle. It's the business side is not in a hype
cycle. I mean, I would say the technology even is in a hype cycle because, I mean, the definition of the was it Bloomberg hype cycle? I always forget who came up with it.
Gardner,
thank you. The Gardner hype cycle. I mean, part of it is that it's not that the technology goes away, right? It's just there's a correction and then the real long-term use cases kind of evolve.
Yeah, it's overhyped.
Yeah,
and it settles into practical, useful things that people
are really and that's going to happen with it. Yeah. But that happens with basically every technology, like some bigger, some smaller, but it happens with every technology. Right. Anything that is useful and people want to do gets hyped. I mean, it's like I see it with programming languages often. It's like gets hyped, goes down, but it never disappears. It's like just levels off at some point.
Pascal hype cycle.
Yeah. Like Ruby on Rails, Go. There's been so many. I mean, Rust recently. Yeah, but as I said, it's just a normal technology. I would say it's just a normal technology adoption cycle. And AI will go through, or is actually kind of already going through that. But it's, as I said, the investment side is the real bubble.
I think when we get through the other side and we're many years down the road, what we're seeing with AI and LLMs today, people will equate to the hype cycles that we had with X-rays and radium.
Mm-hmm.
Because
when
those first became a thing.
We can use this for everything.
Yes.
And so how many people in the in the early 1900s? Mm-hmm. would go into a shoe store and put their feet into a high-powered X-ray machine.
Jeff, that was in the 19... That was in the 1960s. That was
in the 60s? 50s and Holy 60s. Crap. It just all blends together. Okay, so...
be fair, that is a long time ago, too. But...
That was a long time ago. And think about everything that radium ended up in. And
radium girls licking the brush and painting their teeth when they went out for the evening. You know, it's stuff like no one gets.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's the same, but
asbestos.
I think
it's not exactly the same, but I think people in the future will equate this with those types of hype cycles.
Yeah, for sure.
It's misused technology.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, almost every technology. I was just thinking, like electricity was misused at some point. Like when there was a novelty. Yeah. Like it's just like I said. I think all technologies go like some more, some less, but all technologies go through cycles like that. Said I equate AI to electricity because I think it has a fundamental like impact on society, or the computer. Yeah. But I also equate the bubble that we're in right now with the dot-com bubble because I think it's the same craziness that we're seeing. Where it's like, it doesn't mean, I mean, I see so many companies every day. There's a company that renames itself to something AI and they collect millions of dollars in investing as investment without any indication for any real business and any potential even for business. And
because
that's going to end.
Don't put if they don't put AI in it, they can't.
They don't get anything.
Investment.
Exactly. And that's going to end.
Yeah.
It has to, and it will end. And some companies will survive. I honestly don't think OpenAI will survive. That's my personal opinion. But there's a ton of other companies that will. And I'm actually happy about that. I want AI in our life. I think it will make things better. It will also, as usual, make things worse, because that's just how us stupid monkeys are.
Patrice, I think that's a great place to segue into Ian's story.
Monkeys, exactly.
So Ian, tell us about our stupid problem now.
Our stupid problem now is, well, we've trusted these lovely AI tools to help us do things like summarize this email for me and search these emails and give me bits of information, which Microsoft Copilot would encourage you to do almost every time you touch Outlook these days. What's happened is that Copilot will even scan and use data from confidential emails that should not, according to Microsoft's policies, be allowed to be touched by the AI. Oh dear. So it was a coding error, basically the guardrails it set in place. It was still letting the system go merrily off and going, oh, I can look at this and surfacing this information.
Should I guess? Someone used an AI to code those guardrails.
Yeah, oh, let's God.
Yes, let's vibe go this guy. Yeah, completely. I have no doubt. But so what they discovered is that it's a bug in the code that means that it bypasses a thing called DLP they use, which basically sets a series of policies around your data. If you see in Word, you'll see confidential at the top sometimes. You'll see prior or various other codings that companies use. It's one of those, basically, and it's ignoring the fact that it was tagged as a confidential document. So AI can cheerfully go in and pull data from there, use the word surface to make it sound like it's some kind of cool and trendy thing. It's looking at confidential emails, reading that information, and bringing that information back that can be used. And that's terrible. Wow. That's poor. It's now fixed. Microsoft say they've now amended the code, and it's now resolved. So that isn't a problem, but UK NHS are concerned about it. They need to make sure they're patching their systems. It's not a good thing, but this is AI and what can happen. But also on the broader sense of things, when we think about companies get AI, so surveys have been coming up now. People are saying that what people do when they get it, well, the first thing is, what does my boss earn? Enter. And he goes off, and if someone hasn't set up their, has taken their company data and go, here, LLM, analyze this. And they've given all their data to it. And then when the company says, we've now got our own personal work-based, oh, wonderful, what does the boss earn? Enter. Boom, it'll bring it back because there's no guardrails there. So there's a whole market for industries like, I mean, I'm now sounding like I'm shilling my own company's we bought a company called Security AI. They don't actually build the guardrails, but they'll certainly show you where your data goes and what, if you have an LLM and you're letting it access your data, what it can see with their graph technology. And that's how I come to know more about this than I used to, because we've been learning all about this stuff for the last 2 or 3 months. And it's fascinating the fact that it spiders its way into all these different pieces. And but it's also the interesting thing that they've discovered, and is when we start analyzing, this can get there and we can see this and we can see that. It's the combination of effects. All of those things might seem innocent in isolation. So when you pull those bits of information together, you suddenly realize, all those bits of data suddenly become a confidential data breach. So these are the things companies now are desperate trying not to do, because it makes you look very silly in the public's eyes and you lose trust in facing your customers. So these are all the good things why companies like mine and others, there are other ones out there that do the same kind of tech.
I'm starting.
AI is dangerous in that regard, and there's no doubt about it. You could potentially leak data.
I'm honestly, for the last couple of years, I've thought about that, about privacy and like, are we gonna end in a world where privacy just isn't a thing anymore because it's just pointless? And the more I hear, and like this story kind of leads into that, the more I'm like, I'm starting to believe that. Like, I thought it was like, oh no, it's like, no. Like, people always value their privacy, and we'll find better ways to protect stuff and whatever. And then every day there's another data breach, and it's just getting worse. And like, honestly, I think with vibe coding, it's just gonna get worse and not better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, yeah, I wonder is another part of this the, you know, a lot of people complain about Microsoft just throwing Copilot in everything. It's Copilot Notepad,
yes.
Copilot in Excel,
yes.
Copilot in Outlook,
Copilot in Copilot.
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 Every Copilot, app Copilot that to help they you touch Copilot. Has Copilot
yes.
in it.
Yes.
And I wonder if it's also, you know, the gold rush and a lot of the discipline of releasing code has been sacrificed, A, and
yes.
B, it's really hard to QA AI-based
no.
features.
No, it's not. Well, depends.
It's a lot harder than a deterministic
No, okay.
program.
It depends on what you mean with AI-based features. If you mean the AI is the feature, yes, it's hard. If you mean the AI built a feature, that's again possible.
No, I'm talking about things like Copilot to summarize your
to
emails.
Add everything. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's a feature
I mean,
that they should have
tested, it's impossible.
It's not hard. It's not impossible to test. It's just maybe different.
I think that the non-deterministic part of AIs makes it very, very hard. I mean, there's a whole genre, like a whole part of the security industry and also of the on the bad guy side. Prompt injections. Trying to circumvent the guardrails that were put in place to protect from the system doing bad things. And people as usual, as with every security measure, with any API, whatever, that's what we do. People are trying to figure out how to trick it. And said, as stuff is not deterministic, it's harder to do that because you don't know how it's going to react. Right? With code, you could at least say, okay, I can do this and that. I can analyze it that way. And it can be like, okay, this ensures that it's safe. But with an LLM, I mean, as we've seen over time and time again, it's really hard to do that.
I mean, the testing part of software, the variable was always the input or the environment for your software. You wanted to create enough test cases that simulated your customer environment.
Yeah, but it was
in
a deterministic
case. In this case, it's not only the data and the environment that's different. The software, the way it reacts, is also
not
deterministic.
You can literally put in twice the same thing, and it will give you two
different
results. Right. So
well,
it's
I wonder
really
if
hard.
You know if you were really conservative and you were releasing features like this. I mean, I know in the business I was in on that kind of software, we would never release massive new features or even small features to all of our customers at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pick the first five customers, and it would go into their hands for like six months before the next 10 customers would get it.
Yeah. A lot of companies do that. I mean, including Meta and so on these days.
Sure.
Yeah, and especially the big companies.
It would be interesting to know at Microsoft if some of these features if they had any kind of a concept of stage rollout, they must. I mean, Microsoft must know how to release new features to a massive customer base.
And they've been working with the enterprise space for literally decades.
Years. Yeah.
Decades and decades.
Anyway, it would be interesting to hear from an insider, you know, if they thought that they did something wrong or how they could do it better next time.
Microsoft are more and more trying to do less with more at the moment. So they're consistently reducing the number of developers. I keep reading articles about developers being laid off, teams being shrunk, and all this thing within MS. So from that perspective, I can't see how it's so easy to see how this stuff creeps through.
Yeah.
It's so easy to see. It's just there isn't the human going in the same way. You know, my usual example of the where was the person in the back of the meeting room that says why? Why are we doing that?
And I'm actually not so sure.
Thing.
Yeah, I'm actually not so sure in this case.
There's more yes men in the room now, I think, these days. And people go, yeah, that's a brilliant idea. Oh, it's AI. Yeah, let's have that.
Yeah.
How many do them? Just check the Copilot to make sure it's right.
Or there's also more, or alternatively, there's also more decisions or voices being overwritten. Right? Yeah. Someone might be in the room and say, hey, do you think this is a good idea? And the answer is, well, it's AI and we have to do it and screw you.
Yeah.
Well, there's there definitely seems like there was a big push corporate wide to put Copilot in everything Microsoft sold.
Yeah. But I mean, like, wouldn't you do that? If I was Microsoft, that's exactly what I would do. I mean, as you said, right, you might roll it out step by step, but the goal would for sure always be to put it everywhere. That is their new.
That's the problem I have with AI is people is throwing AI at every application in the world.
Yeah.
And AI is not good for every application. It's good for
But you will only figure out if it's good for it or not by actually doing it. So that's part of it.
If I'm on Windows and I'm using Notepad, which is basically a bare bones text editor.
Yeah, you want to generate the text or correct the things or whatever. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe. People do that. No, I can see the argument for it, and I would even agree with it and say, yeah, I mean, this is their new big product that Microsoft is massively investing in it.
I know.
So, of course, they want to have it everywhere.
As a product manager, this willy-nilly throwing technology at everything that we do without thinking it through is just stupid.
It is kind of pisses off customers.
But you've got the double-edged sword.
Yes.
You've got the double-edged sword. On one hand, you say, all right, we're going to take a very measured and thoughtful approach, and we're going to introduce it one stage at a time to each different of our applications. And you're going to get a million people like Patrice out there say, but I want AI in that thing. Why isn't it there?
No, it's all the investors and everybody will scream bloody murder and say, Microsoft is behind. That's the problem.
And that's the other part. Microsoft is behind. They're not keeping up because, look, they're not doing everything with AI.
Exactly.
The funny thing is,
you can't win with this development.
Yeah, again, we're at the bubble argument.
We are at the bubble argument.
Think about what Apple's done. Apple has basically fallen on their face with the PR side of AI. And they're going through it, right? They're being much more measured. They made some mistakes. They pulled back, and they're being much more measured.
And they're getting like bad press for it all the time.
Really? They still sell a lot of iPhones. Yeah,
exactly. I mean,
the price is still pretty good. So
yeah,
I'm not too worried about
but Apple. it's not on the same level as an OpenAI is right now. Right. No, but it's at the end of the day.
I think it depends how you measure. It's
short term thinking versus long term thinking. It's always that.
Right. If you measure based on cash flow per quarter, I think Apple made the right decision. Not
for sure.
AI.
For sure. But it's like as I said, it's short term versus long term thinking. I mean, OpenAI also has no other product, so there's that.
Yeah.
I also brought a AI story. I thought about it actually. Should I do something non-AI?
Thank you for doing the transition. Because as you started your transition, I was opening my mouth to move us
I thought, like, since we were talking about AI, I would throw another one in because it's another, let's say, aspect of the same problem. Like, today is the AI show for some reason.
It's the AI-palooza.
AI-palooza. BTN. Oh, there's another show title for you. Google is adding music generation capabilities to the Gemini app. They have had music generation models for a little while. I think this is the third version that they just released, but now they're building it into things. And I'm kind of torn. Is this a good thing or not? Because on one hand, they're going to include it, I think, into YouTube as well. And I can see, like, I mean, given the crap that creators have gone through on YouTube where, there's free music and then they get claimed for copyright and all of that. And Google is crap at that. So, like, you get blocked whether you actually infringe copyright or not and all of that bullshit. So on one hand, I'm thinking maybe this is a good thing because for creators that, like, can't afford / don't want to / just need some music but it's not super important to them, this might be a good thing. On the other hand, you could argue it's more AI slop in more places, right? And it takes away from the real music and the real musicians.
All right, so my take on this is that there's a middle ground here,
mm-hmm.
where this does add the value, and you already hit on exactly the place where we're talking about copyright for like the YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's a value point. The overall problem that I have with this comes down to the other side that you mentioned, the AI slop.
Mm-hmm.
And that ties in directly to my feeling about where AI is truly useful for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want from these models is something that takes care of all of the repetition, all of the drudge work, if you will, everything where I need to have precision in working with whatever the information is,
mm-hmm.
so that I can focus on doing what I do best. And so I want to be the creator, and that could be like, hey, I'm an internet content creator, or I'm a creator producing something for your company, a blog post, a white paper, a webinar, whatever it is. Let me focus on those things and take care of everything else that can be automated so that I can focus on the places where mm-hmm. where I shine. Don't do the creative part and make me be the drudge guy.
Yeah, but it also depends on what your creative skills are, right? Because if you can create music and or content or write scripts or whatever your skills are, hey, I mean, yeah, that's great. But for the people who are struggling with that, it's hard, right? And for them, this is a good thing. I think you hit the nail. It depends on how it's used, right? If you're doing the Spotify thing, it basically, like, I don't want to call it misleading, but almost misleading people by like just inserting AI generated songs into playlists that people listen to, and through that taking away money from like other artists that actually created that content or created content and would have usually been played and would have gotten a very minimal amount of money for it, but like at least some money for it. I think that's a problem. So it depends on how it's used.
I'm kind of like Jeff. I'm on the fence about this because I think of this in a couple of ways. One is, let's say for the content creator, your expertise is not in overall production, but it's subject matter. You're great at subject matter and you can present it well, but you want your video to have an introductory song to your mm-hmm. video to make it more appealing, but you don't know shit about music. Mm-hmm. So I think the traditional way is, you know, I have a nephew who gets paid to do stuff and puts it on SoundCloud and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to SoundCloud, you find a track, you go, wow, this is a good track. I'll contact this person. I'll pay him, whatever, $50
mm-hmm.
or $10 or whatever it is and get their track. And that's a guy who, in this case, a guy, my cousin, my nephew, who is creating stuff, however he creates music clips, and then people buy it from him. So now this thing, the Lyra-based thing, the Gemini-based thing, could potentially replace that for him. So for me, if I'm a content creator, can't do music, it's great. For my nephew, whose livelihood depends on people buying clips of music from him, is screwed. So, but doesn't all or many advancements, especially in technology, have that effect? Some people get screwed and it benefits other people. You know, the automobile killed the jobs of the people who were paid to scoop up horse poop in the streets with shovels, you know? They had to go find a different way. Maybe that's a bad example.
You know what I mean? Okay, I'll give you a better example. When Linotype was replaced by Adobe PageMaker, or at mm-hmm. the time, right. Aldous PageMaker.
All those people lost their jobs, yeah.
Yeah, except for the people that had the foresight to learn how to use PageMaker.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other typesetters, they that didn't move with the technology, they had a problem.
Yeah.
And but if we equate it to what your nephew does. Then we go back to your unsanitary analogy, because if the thing he does is create the music and that's it, and creating the music is taken away, then where does that leave him? What does he transition to?
Well, maybe he becomes an expert at using Gemini music generation and people still pay him for that, or he's able to create a huge catalog that mm-hmm. he can sell more cheaply because he's got it sort of automated because he's become a Gemini music prompt expert, you know?
Yeah,
and
could
that's
be.
A possibility.
Yeah, could be.
You know, we had the same thing in chip design 40 years ago. We had whole departments of people. They were called layout engineers, and they weren't really engineers. They were technicians. And their skill set was taking engineering drawings of integrated circuits and digitizing them and getting them into computers so they could drive the downstream tools. Mm-hmm. And they had skills. They knew how to use the software that did the digitization, but they weren't circuit design engineers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all got automation tools that allowed me as a circuit designer to do that layout work on a computer, and we didn't need layout engineers.
Yeah.
Some lost their jobs. You know, they were basically draftsmen. They lost mm-hmm. their jobs, or some learned
yeah.
the new layout software and became physical design engineers.
You know what that reminds me of? The movie Hidden Figures. You know, all those computers,
oh, yeah.
the people who actually were computing by hand, well, with the, like
oh, yeah,
tools,
yeah.
but
Bunch
were computing.
Business.
Yeah, and then like, the computers came in, like actually IBM, like mainframes, and the like the ladies learned it and were able to save their jobs.
Yeah. Well, it's like typing pools, secretarial
mm-hmm.
typing
oh,
pools.
True.
You know, these big corporations had whole offices full of women sitting at typewriters typing stuff
yeah.
all day.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some of that, but it's not as big anymore. And it's getting less and less now with dictation and AIs that can do text to speech and so on. Or the other way around, speech to text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, have you has anybody tried the Gemini music generation yet? Is it
any
good?
Nope.
Have not tried it yet.
Oh, yeah.
But I will try it. Like, I try everything. I might not need it for anything and then like try it once. I'm like, okay, interesting, and then move on. But I'll try everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
is it something you can? Do you need a special Gemini account?
Yeah, you need I think you need a Gemini subscription, or through their API you can also use it. That's how I usually do it, because I don't want to pay for a subscription. I just do a one
right.
couple token, couple dollars, and try it. I anyway have an account on Google Cloud for that.
Because Patrice, you have everything.
Yeah, I do. Kind of. Yes. No, I'm constantly experimenting with AI models and seeing what can you do with it and what can't it do. Like, I don't know. Schedule podcasts apparently seems to be very hard.
You know, podcasters are just difficult.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Hey, I need to tell everyone about all technologies before we get too much farther, because we're here thanks to Awe Technologies, because they are making sure we have the resources to bring live shows to you every single week. They're making sure we have the resources for our bandwidth to live stream. They have made sure that we have the server space we need for the website, for all the show files to live so you can watch or listen to recordings anytime you want. And the resources to make this happen, I mean, it takes a lot. So we appreciate that Awe Technologies has stepped up and made this possible. So thank you to Awe Technologies. For those of you that are like, oh, what's that? It's a company out of the UK that lets you have the remote site monitoring that you need for whatever your project is. And they're amazing at what they do. And run by really cool people. So if you need their services, give them a call or ping them on whatever communication platform you like, and and hit them up, have them help you out. Their website is Awe Technologies. That's AWE Technologies. Excuse me. AWETechnologies.co.uk. And thank you for all your help, Awe Technologies. Speaking of help, Patrice, I would love yours because I think you're just so much better at talking about the live chat than I ever am.
Okay, I'll try my best. So we have a really cool live stream. If you're listening to this in like in your favorite podcast player on the website, wherever you found this, I don't know, your LLM recommended it to you. Hey, cool, nice to see you or hear you. We record this show live and we stream it live. And we do that every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time. So if you wanna see how the sausage is made, get the pre-show, the post-show. We talk about random other stuff, and you can interact with us in the chat. More on that in a second. All you have to do is head over to live.britishtechnetwork.com, and that's it. Like it just works. It's like, I mean, you've seen the layout. It's like YouTube. It's like Twitch. Like there's so many others that do it the same way. There's a video on the left. There's a chat on the right. And you can see us do our thing and you can interact with us. And the chat doesn't require any registration. Like you literally just come in and talk to us. So that's how easy it is. It generates really funny names. For example, the Jovial Shockley we got earlier. And I don't know, it's funny. And if you want, you can change your name. There's a purple button up top. You tap it, you say change name. Does its thing. You can also do a Fetty Auth if you want to do that, if you know what that is. Doesn't matter. You don't have to do that. Yeah, so that's how it is. And we put the like all the links to stuff in there. For example, the Colin Furze video that Ian put in, stuff like that. There is a transcript on our website. Doesn't use AI. It's not AI-based transcript. It's literally just chat message gets put into over there. It's actually a cool idea. I should try that. Train a model on our chats. See what it comes up with. It's probably going to be a horror show, but okay, I'll do that.
I think that's a safe bet.
Yes.
Or not train it, just in case.
No, I'll train it and it will probably commit suicide immediately, but we'll see. Or it's just depressed the entire time because it has a brain the size of a galaxy, but I know of a, what was it? A solar system? I don't remember what Marvin had. Yeah, but anyway, we have a transcript. You can just go there, britishtechnetwork.com/chat, and select today's date in the calendar, which is February 19th. It's always Thursdays. February 19th, 2026. If you do that, you will see everything that we talked about in the chat. For example, the cool things that are coming up.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that, Patrice.
You're welcome.
I do appreciate your help. And speaking of cool things, you have the first cool thing for us to talk about. And this actually is pretty cool.
Yeah, so I promised it last week. So last week, remember, I picked this Uniton radio scanner. It comes with this little antenna here. And this antenna is pretty good. It's quite mobile, like you can carry it around, whatever. But if you're at home or you're driving around a car or whatever, it's not super... Like it's not good because it's just too small for that. It will do a reasonable job when you're outside or whatever. If you're in an airplane, you could probably also use that, but like it will not work if you're inside somewhere. But the cool thing is this device has a good old BNC connector. Remember that? Networks,
old
BNC,
school.
Old school BNC connector. So you just remove it. And my cool thing today is the antenna I bought with it, which has also a very cool name because it is the Moonraker Skyscan Mobile.
Of course it is.
I just love that name. It is magnetic, so stuff sticks to the bottom. So actually I think it's supposed to be for like, you can put it on like the roof of a car or something metal. That's how it's designed, but you can also use it at home and put it on your windowsill. They actually do recommend that you put something metal under it because it's just designed that way that there's metal there. I found you don't need to. It still works fine. It's slightly better if it's not. It has frequency range is 25 to 2000 megahertz. So basically everything you would care about. It comes with those like four different lengths of antennas. It has quite some weight. said, it's magnetic. And it comes with a 4 meter long cable, which like, goes around my desk here. And I literally put that on my windowsill here so I can like listen to Bean Radar and have funny things that I'm not allowed to talk about. There's tons of funny stuff that happens on radio sometimes, especially around here. Yeah, and you just like plug it in. Like I put this on my desk, plug it into the BNC port, and then that's it. So that's how easy it is. There's really nothing, no assembly. You can remove, there's screws you like here on the side. You can remove the antennas if you wanted to, you know, if you're carrying it around or whatever, it's easier. You can literally take this apart. It has some pretty solid screws to take it apart, but it's just a good antenna. And the good name is just very cool. Moonraker.
It is a cool looking antenna.
Yeah, it is. There's a bigger version.
I love it.
There's a big, and it's not expensive. It's like 30 euros, I think, 28 euros or something plus shipping, $30. There's a bigger desktop version if you really wanted that. It's like 80 or 90. But to be fair, I did look at a lot of reviews and most of them said, unless you have very specific needs, it's not worth the upgrade. The frequency range is the same. It does work very similar. It's marginally better, and you could mount it on a pole. That's the difference to the desktop version. But it's really, like, you really don't need to. So $30, which is
very
cool. Good price.
Yeah, I could get that. I could listen to those noisy buggers that fly over my house from our yes. awakening that don't have the yeah. transponders in. I could figure out who it is. Sadly, I couldn't say.
Oh, my noise is still my
annoying. I mean, for one, you probably can't because those frequencies are probably encrypted.
Right.
Yeah, true.
And the other part is you should definitely check whether you're allowed to, because that depends. Mm-hmm. Like here in Austria, you're allowed to listen, but you're not allowed to talk about what you heard because that the communication itself is secret if you have a license. At least that's the gray area that we've worked out with lawyers and whatever. So it's different in different countries. Austria is one of few countries where you're not allowed to do that. Like in most countries, this is totally illegal and you can just listen to it. Yeah, as I said, and anything like that's anything.
Get radio license. They get, might not have yeah. radio license, but yeah, you can listen.
Yeah, you might need, I mean, in Austria, for example, I have a license and so I'm allowed to. But as I said, it depends and you have to definitely check your laws, what the rules are and what you're allowed to. And as I said, maybe don't. Like I would say in general, I mean, these days, anything that is sensitive or secret or whatever is encrypted. Like here, around here, all the, like the police, everybody, like military, everything is encrypted. Like you don't hear anything. But
Yeah,
might not always be the same. Not everywhere, not the same. The laws aren't the same. The laws are sometimes also from like a long, long time ago and just haven't changed, like in Austria. So you should definitely check your laws before you do that.
Ian, just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know about the UK. I'm relatively certain that the
UK. Yeah, I'm radio set up, but I'm just having to read now to see what you
need. I'm relatively certain that in the US, as far as I know, it's legal. It's actually legal in most places in the world, as far as I've read. Just Austria and Germany are kind of backwards as usual.
Yeah, just listening in the US.
Yeah.
It totally fine.
Yeah, of course.
If it's a frequency you're not supposed to listen to, it's already encrypted.
Yeah, of course. Right. Calling into a frequency would be a completely different topic. Like then that goes into illegal territory pretty quickly. But also that makes sense. Like that's why I got a scanner that can only receive and not send, because not even accidentally I would want to interfere there.
Yep. All right. Very cool pick. And Ian, your turn.
My turn. I've picked up a device that I've had a couple of goes with different variants of these type of products. I bought a really cheap one. I bought a Loop from Polar. Good product. So what is this product? It's a screenless health tracker. I really want just one of the Fitbit ones I used to have years ago that clipped onto my belt that took my steps.
I miss
those. I can't buy anything like that anymore. You can't buy anything like that anymore. So first thing I went for was the Polar Loop. So I thought, it's made by a decent company, it'll be all right. The hardware implementation was fantastic. The software was utter shite. There's no other word for it. It was junk. It's still junk, according to the threads I read. So sent it back, told them it was useless. They were fine. I got a full refund. I bought a cheap Chinese thing. That was unreliable at best, but kind of did some of it. In the end, I thought, that's not worth it. I sent that back to Amazon as well. And now I'm on my third iteration, one that's been very popular. It's a replace. It's a, another product allied to the Whoop kind of technology. So again, screenless tracker. This one's called an Amazfit by a company. It's made by a company called Amazfit, and it's called a Helios. Use a bit of software called Zep. It's made in China. So with all those things, again, I'm giving my heart rate and my sleep patterns to some Chinese AI company somewhere, and I don't care. So this is all fine, but it does give me some quite good data. I get it's smart enough to know when I've gone for a run. It will track that for me, give me the data. Smart enough to know if I've been for a walk. I don't have to go tracking and setting things. Seems to keep a reasonably accurate trace of my steps. So quids in so far. I don't want a smart, and the reason why I don't want a smartwatch is I like normal watches. I like my old classic Casios and my expensive Omegas and things. I'd rather wear that than one of these. So this sits on my right wrist and just goes away and happily monitors me. So I'm quite pleased with it so far. I've had it over a week or so now. So it's not got it yesterday and think it's brilliant. It's been on my wrist now 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And I'm quite impressed with it. It seems to be doing a good job. Doesn't need an awful lot of charging. So far,
which is good.
Impressed. So yeah. Far impressed, and the reviews I'd all read were all favourable of saying this is really good if you don't want to pay Whoop, which is probably the closest thing to medical grade scanning you can buy from what I read. Again, their top of the range product is, but you've got to pay them 300 quid a year to get all that data and all that monitoring. And frankly, I don't want to, so I'm happy to pay this, which was £120, I think, or £100 they are. They're not super expensive. Yeah. If you want to dip your own, then try it. It's quite good. As I said, I'd rather have my old clip on the belt one, but you can't get them anymore. So
next that's best how thing I started. I can
find that seems to do. Yep, as did I. We bought, first one of us got one. We all thought it was brilliant. Everyone had one in the house at one point. We're all great.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Very cool. And Tom, now it's your turn.
Okay. I had to check because I was worried I picked this cool thing before, but I don't think I did. If I did, remind me. But it's
the book.
Yeah, nobody remembers. If it's it's the book Slow Horses by Mick Herron.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it's us good. Have watched the series on Apple TV. You know, it's fantastic. It's one of my favorite series. So my sister had gotten a book. And she's never seen the series, by the way. It's a long story. But she's never seen the series. So I read the book. It was fantastic. It was a great read. So I highly recommend it. Of course, it would have been better to read the book before watching the series. But as usual, the book has more depth. And it's a good read. I think Mick Herron is a pretty good writer. So I highly recommend it, especially if you've seen the series. If you haven't seen the series, read the book, then watch the series. The only thing for us, for Americans like me, was some of the slang was hard to decode. And I was a little bit concerned about Googling some of the slang.
I would be.
Mucked up my search history. So thankfully, Crikey Trousers, Graham on the Slack, I threw a few of them at him, and he helped me help explain a few of them. Of the phrases to me and in the Slack room, and I'm glad I did it there and not on Google on a few of them. Anyway, thank you, Graham, for helping me understand some of the slang. My favorite was sit and spin.
Sit and spin.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Over my
no idea.
I yes, have no idea. That's mm-hmm. what it is. That's what it is. Swivel yep. on this one. And all of that from my childhood. That's one from my childhood.
Yep.
All right. For those of you that listen to the audio recording only, note the time so you can go and check out the video and then it all makes sense.
Ian was showing the international sign for peace, love, and rock and roll.
That's right.
Yeah.
According to Mr. Bean, at least. I got the book for Christmas. I'm looking forward to trying to sit down and spend time to read it because it was a really enjoyable series. That.
Yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah, I added it to my one,
isn't there, I think.
Yeah, I added it to my one to read list on hardcover.
I've heard from several people that the Slow Horses series is really, really good.
Yeah. So I only finished the first book, and I'm looking forward to reading the rest of them as well.
Awesome. All right, I believe it's my turn now. And today I'm bringing an iPhone app, and it's Parcel.
Good app.
There are a bunch of really good package delivery tracking apps out there. Mm-hmm. Parcel's the one that does it for me.
Yes.
It's really good at... I recognize that. Yeah. What I found is that in many cases, it will have updates on package status faster than the service alerts.
Yes.
For whatever the service is.
Sometimes faster than the website. If you go there, it will only show it after a little while. Like the shipping company's website. Like.
Yeah. It's great. And you can link your Amazon Prime account to it. And so it automatically adds all of your Amazon orders.
Yeah. Doesn't require Prime just because you said Amazon Prime. Just Amazon.
Oh, right. I forget. Yeah. Not everyone uses Amazon Prime for
Yeah. Doesn't require Prime. You can literally sign in with Amazon, and anything you order will automatically show up in the app, and you can track it.
So you don't have any concerns with giving all your Amazon data to a guy named Ivan?
Nope. He's a good guy. I've met him. He's a good guy.
Oh, well, there you go. I was okay with this at first. Just when it came out, he added in the Amazon support. Mm-hmm. And but now, knowing that Patrice, you have met him.
Mm-hmm. That helps.
Yep.
Yeah, so, but I mean, you don't have to. It's your decision. Like, you don't have to. You can also manually add it. It's not a problem.
Mm. You can use the app for free.
Yes.
There's it's like a $5 annual subscription.
Mm-hmm.
That gets you more features.
Yeah,
$5 annual.
Yeah.
That's incredible. $5 for annual. That's great.
Yeah.
I pay it. I don't even remember what I got extra for that, but whatever it was like, yeah, I kind of need this. But even if I didn't, at $5, it's totally worth it to support Ivan.
Yeah.
So there you go. Parcel. It's my favorite iOS app, package tracker.
So how is he getting the data? You give it like the tracking ID and it goes off and finds it?
Yeah, it goes to it integrates with the carriers, the APIs or sites, and then it does. I actually just saw, I'm not in a subscription because I purchased it a long time ago, but I should switch because it has some extra features. Good to know.
So what am I getting for my subscription?
That is a good question.
I mean, ultimately,
notifications, tracking more than 3 deliveries, ads get removed. You can use web access to check deliveries in the browser and additional app icons.
Oh, it says here. Well, there you go. The track more than 3 packages at a time. There have been many times where that's been super useful.
Yes. For me as well. Yeah, I'll switch to the subscription. I'm okay with giving him $5 a year.
Yeah, totally worth it. I mean, even if it's $5 a month, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah. But. Yeah, the $5 is totally worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there you go. It is now time to figure out where people can find each of you without needing to use a delivery tracker. So Patrice, where can people find you?
Hiding under my desk because people are trying to find me.
This is fair.
Okay, but also you can see me at least every week on the Big Show on Thursdays and on the Mac Show on Fridays. So tomorrow we'll talk about exciting new stuff that's happening in the Apple side of things. You can find my social media links, my podcasts, my projects, all of that on my website, thepatrice.com will take you there. And with a certain Jeff Gamet, I have a podcast called Retro Rewatch. I like to show the mug, as always, because it's just a cool mug. And here's in the dishwasher. You have to get your war. We rewatch retro TV shows and then talk about it on podcasts. We are in the beginning, basically, of season 4 now. Tomorrow, the very first episode and the conclusion of the cliffhanger of season 3's Nemesis episode and what happens to the replicators is due out. And so we're starting the journey into season 4 of Stargate SG-1, and it's going to be a fun journey. So stay tuned for that.
I can't wait to see what we think of season 4.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jeff has predictions. They are usually wrong.
They're usually wrong. but when I get one right, okay, it's a wonderfully fun surprise.
It's a complete accident, but yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, occasionally I can figure it out. But,
yes, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually I am so wrong.
And it's fun.
It is. It's not going to stop me from trying.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me usually here on the Big Show on a Thursday. Those up for the next 2 weeks because I'm doing various things. But after that, I'm here on Thursdays, or I'm on the Big Show, or I'm in the Slack room or LinkedIn, and soon to be on our Watch Show when eventually we get round to doing it. You and myself and Graham, the man whose browsers are crikey, we'll be talking about watches on this very channel.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. And Tom, your turn. Where can people find you?
People can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay. And then for me, Jay Gamet on the various social medias, mostly though on Mastodon, PixelFit, and Blue Sky. Then for other shows, Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live, Thursdays on Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS, here on the British Tech Network for the Big Show and the Mac Show. Brian Chaffin and I do the Context Machine, and as Patrice pointed out, we do Retro Rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with that, thank you to the three of you for making my Thursday, in this case Thursday afternoon, just so much fun. I have really enjoyed being here with the three of you, and I look forward to it every single week. So thank you for being awesome people and great friends. Hey, everyone that watches, listens live, thank you for being here. If you're in the live chat, hey, thanks for doing that too. Everyone that's joining in on the show recordings, thank you for being part of all of this as well. Hey, Ewan, thanks for being you. Mahler, thanks for making sure there are people for shows. And Odd Technologies, thank you for being here and supporting us. So, everyone, what you need to do now is clear your schedule for Friday so that you can join us for the Mac Show. And then don't forget to come back next Thursday for the Big Show again. And all of you, have an awesome weekend.